The Progressive Commentary Hour with Gary Null, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome you to this program. You're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour, and each week at this time I take on the issues that normally are not discussed in the mainstream media, or when they are discussed, are almost always discussed with a bias, the official position only. And today we have many topics to discuss in every one. We're going to begin with vaccine conspiracy. The CDC caught lying again. This is an original, in-depth expose by myself, Jeremy Stillman, and Dr. Nancy Ashley from my staff. A bombshell revelation came out of an investigation by the drug safety group Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs, and it's rocked the foundation of a belief widely held by mainstream medicine, the idea that vaccines do not cause autism. In a news release, they have exposed a cover-up by authorities at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and vaccine researchers who deliberately omitted critical data from a 2003 article on mercury and autism that was carried out in Denmark. The conclusion of the article denied any causal relationship between the mercury-laden vaccine ingredient thimerosal and autism. However, documents obtained indicate that the authors of the article, with the full approval of the CDC, decided to leave out large quantities of data, which in fact supported a strong link between thimerosal and the incidence of autism. The documents, which were acquired through a Freedom of Information Act, revealed correspondences between individuals at the CDC and scientists working on the Danish article. The article examined rates of autism in Denmark after nationwide phasing out of all thimerosal-containing vaccines in 1992. The unearthed communications proved that the data collected during the study actually reflected an overall decrease in the incidence of autism since the phase-out was implemented, meaning they got rid of the mercury in the vaccines and autism dropped. However, the article's authors chose to use only very select data, which actually bolstered the conclusion that rates of autism in Denmark had risen since 1992. This decision was deemed entirely acceptable by officials at the CDC. In one missive that we have documents on to the CDC that was turned up in the investigation, a researcher working on the study called attention to the exclusion of important data associating thimerosal-fortified vaccines with autism. Part of the communication stated, quote, "Attached, I send you a short and long manuscript about thimerosal and autism in Denmark. I need to tell you that the figures do not include the latest data, but the incidence and prevalence are still decreasing in 2001, unquote. Now, mind you, they are very clear here. There is no equivocation. The Denmark scientist is saying autism is decreasing. But that is because they took the thimerosal out of vaccines. The documents also reveal that the lead author of the article was aware of the extensive omissions of data before submitting the final draft for review and publication. The CDC chose to ignore the deeply flawed in fact, fraudulent science behind the article's conclusions, and even went so far as to send a recommendation letter to the editor of the American Academy of Pediatrics journal, Pediatrics, which called on the group to fast-track the article's review and publication. Since it was published 8 years ago, the article has been highly touted by every major media and medical institution and healthcare professional as definitive proof of no association between mercury and autism spectrum disorder. But they are either misinformed or they lie. In either case, they are wrong. And because of these new secret documents and emails, we can prove unequivocally in any court of law the forensic evidence, the prima facie evidence shows they lied. The CDC, an extraordinarily nefarious and corrupt organization, has once again, as it's done, as I was shown a moment, many times in its history, it has manipulated science. It has excluded what it did not want to report that would have revealed the truth. That the thimerosal and vaccines, and the combination of vaccines, the number of vaccines, have contributed to autism spectrum disorder and other conditions. Let us backtrack for a moment, however. What is thimerosal? Thimerosal is an organic compound made up of equal parts ethyl mercury and thiosalicylic acid. It was developed by Eli Lilly. Thimerosal was registered in 1929 as a compound with antiseptic and antibacterial properties and was widely used in a variety of products prior to the development of antibiotics. The use of thimerosal as a preservative in vaccines appears to have been based on a single, uncontrolled, poorly reported human study in the 1920s. The FDA never required the pharmaceutical industry to conduct truly scientific safety studies on thimerosal, and consequently, to this date, there has never been one study that has proven thimerosal is safe. Not one anywhere that we can find after reviewing thousands of studies, not in toxicology, not in immunology, nowhere. The medical literature is replete with references to the dangers of mercury, a heavy metal known to be toxic at certain levels. Its toxic effects on the developing brain may progress to severe brain damage, cerebellar ataxia, delayed achievement of developmental milestones, neurological abnormalities, constriction of the visual fields, and loss of hearing. Impacts on cognitive thinking and memory and attention and language, fine motor and visual spatial skills have been seen in children exposed to mercury in the womb. According to the EPA guidelines, doses of mercury should never exceed 0.1 micrograms per kilogram per day. This means that a child receiving a standard vaccine containing 12.5 micrograms of mercury, which is the lowest amount of mercury in a mercury-containing vaccine, like the flu vaccine, would be receiving a toxic dose. A rare study compared DPT vaccines with and without thimerosal shows that the thimerosal-containing vaccine caused higher rates of speech disorders, autism, and cardiac arrest. There is scientific evidence connecting mercury vaccines and autism. An investigation published in the journal Toxicology and Environmental Health in July 2011 offers great insight into the relationship between autism and mercury. Australian researchers Dr. David Austin, Ph.D., and Kerry Shandley surveyed a group of adults who were survivors of pink disease or infantile acrotinidia, an ailment historically caused by exposure to mercury found in teething powder, diaper rinses, and other materials. Since the survivors of pink disorder or pink disease were proven to be sensitive to mercury, the study set out to find whether or not higher rates of autism were present in their grandchildren. Austin and Shandley demonstrated that 1 in 25, I repeat, 1 in 25 of the survivors' grandchildren had some form of autism spectrum disorder. The frequency of autism among children in the general population of Australia in the same age group as those survived surveyed was 1 in 160. The results unequivocally show that children with a family history of susceptibility to mercury poisoning are far more likely to develop autism. Again, 1 in 25 versus 1 in 60. Two articles appeared in the neuroscience journal Actia Neurobiologic Experimentis in 2010, providing convincing evidence of a relationship between vaccines and autism. In the first study done by researchers at the University of Pittsburgh, baby macaque monkeys were given a course of vaccinations typical of the 1990s vaccine schedule. In comparison with the control group, the vaccinated monkeys displayed abnormal patterns of brain growth and dysfunction of the amygdala, but both strong indicators of autism when they appear in children. In the other article, researchers at the University of Northern Iowa evaluated dozens of studies that claimed to refute the relationship between autism and exposure to toxic metals such as mercury found in vaccines. The evidence gathered overwhelmingly contradicted the study's conclusions and suggested that the presence of heavy metals in the body of children is indeed connected with autism. The scientists also determined that several of these studies used erroneous statistics and faulty methodologies to come to their conclusions. A 2004 study conducted by Northwestern University pharmacy professor Richard Death and researchers from the University of Nebraska, Tufts, and Johns Hopkins Universities offered further evidence of a connection between vaccines and neurological disorders. The study found that toxins contained within vaccines disrupt the biochemical process of myelination and in the human body methylation. And methylation plays an extremely important role in normal DNA function and neurological growth in infants and children. The group's findings suggest that toxicants introduced through vaccinations contribute to conditions such as autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The results were published in the Journal of Molecular Psychiatry. In a study published in the Journal of Biomedical Science in 2002, scientists at Utah State University's Department of Biology analyzed the effects of the MMR vaccine, that's measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, on the central nervous system. In their evaluation, the group discovered that autistic children given the vaccine poses a significant elevated number of type antibody related to measles. These antibodies trigger an abnormal autoimmune response that effectively damages the brain's myelin sheath. Evidence suggests that such damage to the myelin sheath may impair normal brain activities and cause autism. In another study exposing the dangers of the MMR injection, researchers at the University of California, San Diego, and San Diego State University showed a significantly higher incidence of autism among children who were given the MMR vaccine and subsequently took medications. Their findings were published in the medical journal Autism. The conclusions of these investigations are corroborated by the work of Dr. Boyd Haley, who has done extensive research in the area of toxicology. Dr. Haley served as the chairman of University of Kentucky's Department of Chemistry and spent 3 years as a National Institutes of Health postdoctoral scholar at the Yale University Medical School's Department of Physiology. Dr. Haley's comprehensive body of research demonstrates a startling connection between the use of mercury fortified thimerosal in vaccines and neurological disease. His research has identified mercury, even in minuscule amounts, to be a dangerous immunity suppressant that is damaging to the neurological health and major contributor to autism spectrum disorder. Dr. Haley's scientific inquiries have provided strong evidence documenting how ethylmercury inhibits the process of phagocytosis, that's a critical important biological process of the human immune system. It impairs the function of dendritic neurons in the brain and hinders the production of methyl B12. Each of these adverse events are significant factors in the onset of neurological illness. So on the one hand, we have substantial scientific evidence that has never been put together in one place and has not been a part of the mainstream media, nor the talking points for those people debating autism, and vaccines. And part of the reason this has not come about is because of the CDC's enormous influence in the debate. The CDC has a sordid history of supporting the pharmaceutical industry and suppressing information to the detriment of our health. There are key pieces of the puzzle which need to be examined in order to understand who is behind and what is behind the cover-up of the relationship between thimerosal and autism. The current revelation that critical data was omitted from the Danish study in order to alter the conclusion is not the only example of deceit connected with this project. A central figure involved in the scandal is Dr. Paul Thorsen, who served as the CDC's chief conductor and or overall supervisor for the Danish study. On April 13th of this year, Thorsen was indicted by U.S. federal grand jury for using his personal bank account at the CDC credit union to launder more than $1 million earmarked for autism research under CDC grants. He is facing 13 counts of wire fraud and 9 counts of money laundering. The U.S. Attorney's Office is currently in the process of extraditing Thorsen from Denmark to face charges. In light of these developments, have the CDC, the FDA, or any other major journals published Thorsen's pro-vaccine autism research, denounced him, or called his research into question? No. Thorsen's research is too important of a cornerstone in the so-called evidence which dispels any link between vaccine and autism, because the moment you question vaccines and autism, they immediately say, but there can't be. The definitive study that was done in Denmark proves it, and Dr. Thorsen, one of the world's leading researchers, has conclusively shown there is no connection. End of story. But now we realize that Thorsen has been indicted, he cannot be trusted on any level, and his work should be repudiated. So, in light of these developments, we believe that his so-called evidence, which dispels any link between vaccine and autism, should be set aside. Therefore, it is unlikely that his career and published work will face the same fate as that of Dr. Andrew Wakefield. But there's something really nefarious in all this, and it is called Simpson Wood. In June of 2000, a group of top government scientists and health officials and CDC and FDA scientists and representatives from the pharmaceutical industry attended a conference convened by the CDC at the Simpson Wood Conference Center in Norcross, Georgia. Officials titled the Scientific Review of Vaccine Safety Date Link Information. The Simpson Wood Conference was held to review the findings of a large epidemiological study evaluating any relationship between thimerosal and autism. The meeting was not open to the public and was subject to a complete news embargo. But thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request filed by Robert Kennedy Jr., a transcript of the meeting became available. The transcript revealed not only damning information about the dangers of thimerosal, but also the cold-blooded cover-up of this information. The director of the DateLink study, CDC epidemiologist Dr. Tom Verstraeten, was quoted as saying, quote, "I was actually stunned by what I saw," citing the staggering number of earlier studies that indicate there is a link between thimerosal and speech delays, attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, and autism. What happened to the important results of the data link information was best summed up by then Congressman Dave Weldon of Florida, a medical doctor himself. Weldon wrote the following to the CDC's director, Dr. Julia Gerberding, after reading the draft of a study authored by Dr. Verstraeten. Quote, "A review of these documents leaves me very concerned that rather than working and seeking to understand whether or not some children were exposed to harmful levels of mercury in childhood vaccines in the 1990s, there may have been a selective use of the data to make the associations in the earliest studies disappear." Unquote. In other words, a cover-up. Dr. Verstraeten, who by then was working for pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline, went on to publish the manipulated data in the journal Pediatrics. the study ran counter to everything he had reported at Simpsonwood and concluded there was no correlation between neurodevelopmental problems and thimerosal exposure. But his on-the-transcript statements at Simpsonwood flatly contradict that. Then we had the Pace University study. In contradiction to most of the mainstream reports of studies dismissing any link between vaccines and autism, a detailed research study appearing in the Pace Environmental Law Review, March of 2011, revealed that the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program had been very secretly compensating 83 separate families for cases of vaccine-induced encephalopathy and residual seizure disorder associated with autism. In 21 of these 83 cases, the word autism is actually used in the court documents to describe the injuries that resulted from vaccination. The obvious conclusion is, in paying these claims, frequently millions of dollars per family, the government has implicitly acknowledged a link between vaccination and autism, but then had people sign confidentiality agreements they could not discuss any part of the case or its settlement. As a result, the government was buying people's silence. Now, money did not go to the parents for use as they chose fit. Rather, it went to support the health services that would be required for a lifetime of their affected children. As a result, many of the parents were discouraged, including one doctor, because this information should have been made generally available in public. It was not. So on the one hand, so we understand this, the government publishes articles, its authors working for the government, showing there is no link between autism and vaccine, but then their own statements on the record when they don't realize they're being quoted and that will never see the light of day shows that they do know there's an association. The government's leading scientist working on this is indicted for a theft, and he was the leading spokesperson, not a person of high-level integrity. Then we have multiple independent studies done by credible people who are independent, not pro-vaccine researchers, who show there is an association between brain developmental disorders, neurological disorders, autism, and vaccines in combination or with thimerosal. Then the one agency government says you can't give more than 14 micrograms per kilogram per day of thimerosal, but another agency of government, the CDC and the FDA, say, but your baby has to have this and it's 25 micrograms. Almost double what is allowed, hence knowingly giving toxic doses to mercury to children. Then when the Danish study had actual decreases in autism from 1992 on until 2001 when they took the mercury out, they turned around and reversed this to show that autism had increased, but it didn't. There was a cover-up. Needless to say, no one who was involved in this ever thought that the text messages would be revealed. But they were. We've caught them lying. We've caught them covering up. We've caught the government saying, yes, your child had autism. Yes, it was because of the vaccine. And we're going to give you millions of dollars. But you've got to sign a consent order. And not one family, but 83. So now we know the truth. Will any major media cover it? They can't. Do not expect that. The official media must only go to the official sources who will continue to be officially in charge and will give you official lies. The very same agencies that have lied repeatedly on multiple occasions throughout history will continue that practice. The media then will be stuck with the idea that if I blow the story on this and show it for the scandal it is, I will no longer have access to this and there'll be strong repercussions. So the legislators who are frequently hired as consultants or put on K Street retainers of $1 million or more a year, if they work hand in hand with the pharmaceutical industry, will not allow their reputations to be used to show the truth. To the contrary, they'll continue to put out the word as lobbyists from the pharmaceutical company making vaccines. Vaccines are not responsible for any damage and certainly not autism. so the lies will continue. Now, separately, let's take a look at the latest on Gardasil. As of today, the government is pushing strongly to get boys vaccinated. Why? The push for anthrax vaccination comes at a time when the CDC has just added another vaccine to the immunization schedule of boys 11 to 12, Gardasil. The popular human papillomavirus vaccine is now being recommended by the CDC for preteen boys who, according to federal health authorities, are at risk of developing anal, penile, and oral cancer stemming from sexually transmitted human papillomavirus. One outspoken critic of this decision is Dr. Diane Harper, a former FDA researcher who played a large role in having Gardasil approved in 2006. She currently works as the director of the Gynecological Cancer Prevention Research Group at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. In an interview, Dr. Harper stated that the long-term effectiveness of the vaccine, Gardasil, in preventing cancer-causing strains of human papillomavirus had not been established. Further, Dr. Harper mentioned that any immunological benefits given to boys by the vaccines would wear off years earlier than they would be for girls. Harper also went on to say that she thinks, quote, it is misguided to think that all boys will gain any health benefits from human papilloma vaccinations, unquote. Officials, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, also expressed their misgivings over the CDC's latest recommendation that Gardasil be used on boys. The American Association of Physicians and Surgeons director, Alida Eck, MD, questioned the propriety of vaccinating boys for a condition that plays a relatively minor role in the risks associated with promiscuity. Dr. Eck stated, quote, if we knew a swimming pool was heavily contaminated, would we buy our children wetsuits in case they decided to go swimming anyway? Unquote. Now the next deadly injection, anthrax. Just a few days ago, the National Biodefense Science Board voted 12-1 in favor of beginning testing of the anthrax vaccine on children. The influential group claims that anthrax vaccinations would help to protect against a potential bioterrorist attack using the anthrax bacteria. The responsibility now lies with officials at the Department of Health and Human Services who are considering whether to move ahead with testing the vaccine on children. Since 1998, more than 2.6 million individuals have been given the anthrax vaccine. Most of them have been members of the military who served overseas. Due to its very harmful side effects, the anthrax vaccine has been a roundly criticized vaccine. In the wake of the anthrax attack on Washington, D.C. in 2001, former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist commented on the rise of vaccines, saying, quote, there are very real and potentially serious side effects from the vaccine, and anyone who elects to receive the vaccine needs to be made aware of that. I do not recommend widespread inoculation for people with a vaccine in the heart building. There are too many side effects, and if there is limited chance of exposure, the side effects would far outweigh any potential advantages. End quote. In an interview with the Washington Post, Vera Sharava of the Alliance for Human Research Protection condemned this idea, saying that the trial would expose healthy children to substantial harm with no possibility of benefit. Speaking during an interview on the Progressive Radio Network, bioterrorism and anthrax vaccine expert Dr. Merle Nass of the Mount Desert Island Hospital in Bar Harbor, Maine, voiced her serious concern over the advisory panel's recommendations for testing anthrax vaccines on children. Dr. Nass contended that it is, quote, an extremely dangerous vaccine, pointing that even the federal government has recognized that no less than 7% of anthrax vaccine recipients have experienced serious side effects. Further, Dr. Nass discussed that the efficacy of the anthrax vaccine has never been established, and there is no scientific evidence that indicates that mass vaccination of anthrax would be beneficial to anyone. Speculating on the true reasons for bringing about the trial of the vaccine, Dr. Nass said that the vaccine's manufacturer, Emergent, may be looking to expand the number of people eligible for the vaccine, which is currently available only for people between 18 and 65. She noted the astronomical profit margin on the anthrax vaccine, which is about 300%, while the profit margin on most other vaccines is usually around 10%. Dr. Nass also brought up the critical fact that in 2008, the federal government passed legislation stripping Americans of the right to sue the manufacturer of all vaccines for damages. In conclusion, this latest scandal proves yet again that the CDC has failed to protect the health of the American public. The fact that the CDC, with malice aforethought, willfully withheld vital information resulted in policies that allowed the continuation of the status quo. Dangerous mercury-laden vaccines mandated for children and infants, and huge profits to the pharmaceutical companies that produce them. Given the state of affairs, it's no wonder that an increasing number of individuals are raising doubts over the safety and efficacy of vaccines. In fact, the findings of a study presented this month at a convention of the Infectious Disease Society of America indicated that younger medical doctors are 15% less likely to put full faith in the effectiveness of vaccine than their older counterparts. Even still, the medical establishment is forging ahead with plans to expand their agenda of dangerous and unnecessary mass vaccinations. Perhaps this most recent revelation will prove to be the tipping point that finally leads to a critical reassessment of the role of the CDC and the FDA in regulating the vaccine industry. All of the statements made are fully supported with research and documentation. The footnotes and the article itself will be online at progressiveradionetwork.com and GaryNall.com and my Facebook. I believe it's extremely important that we understand what we're dealing with, because right now we have literally no advocates protecting us within the government or the CDC or the FDA. These are all controlled areas by those in power, and that does not bode well. It does not help us. Your calls, your thoughts, your opinions here on Progressive Radio Network and the Progressive Commentary Hour. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and if you wish to talk, please do so. And then I'll give you the latest commentary on, and this is all about cafeteria food. Why do we get the worst food in the world serving cafeterias? Then, from A. Tagieva from Global Research, Western corporations fighting for Libyan oil. Who will get the spoils of the war? And we have others to come. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
Dear one, the world is waiting for the sunrise. Every rose is covered with dew. And while the world is waiting for the sunrise, my heart is calling.
New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Gary. Just recently, my wife, who has worked for a New Jersey hospital for 6 years, was given a memo stating that the hospital is now mandating that she take the flu shot, and if she doesn't, she's going to be terminated in December. most of her administrative staff that works with her that had taken the flu shot last year all got sick, and she was the only one who didn't at that time. So my question is there anything at this point that she can do?
Yes, she can sue the hospital, and she has certain constitutional rights. Religious exemption is one, health exemption is another, and we fought in New York State, and my suggestion is go to my YouTube, Gary Nall YouTube, and look at my testimony under oath before the New York State Health Department. They intentionally put me last in the day. I was there first. I was there when the first person was there. I should have been, based upon their rules, the first to testify, but that's when the major media was there. And so they let all these pro-vaccine people testify first, and late at night when the media was gone, everybody gone home except a few people, that's when I testified. And I let them have it. And in my 22 minutes, which you can see for yourself, I cite facts. I also had given every member of the New York State Legislature 110 pages of scientific evidence against vaccines, especially the H1N1 and the flu vaccine. They were requiring 2 and 2. All 4 contain mercury. That would have been 100 micrograms of mercury. And that's a very high dosage. In any case, because of that and the public outpouring, we managed to get a moratorium, which is still in place to this day, so that the health workers in New York State are not mandatory to get this. But what we're dealing with here is we're really dealing with ethics. We're dealing with morality. It was Adlai Stevenson who said it's often easier to fight for principles than to live up to them. And so this is where you and your wife have to make a decision. Are you willing to fight and make it a public fight? And if you are, you're going to have an enormous amount of support. There's a lot of anti-vaccine advocates and educators in New Jersey. We have the tools, we have the studies, we have the science on our side. All that the state of New Jersey has, and the corrupt little cesspool of a government that you have there, is you have illusion that these are safe and effective. In the last month and a half, I have published 4 articles challenging vaccine safety and efficacy. Including in those are studies that prove beyond a shadow of a doubt and can withstand cross-examination in a court of law that no vaccine ever created can be proven safe and effective for a given individual, let alone creating herd. Their idea is if we immunize someone with a live or dead virus and bacteria, then we are safe. And no, we're not safe, because the fact that you create antibodies doesn't mean those antibodies are in and of themselves protective. We have seen people with high antibodies to a given virus who come down with the illness. We've seen people with low antibodies who are protected. So the fact that they can trigger some artificial antibody reaction doesn't mean that that is good. Also, we've seen now that when you get chickenpox, measles, or mumps, you're immune for life. And when you get the artificial immune stimulation, those wear off in a short period of time. In fact, the hepatitis B vaccine, as I used in an example, is mainly for people who are very sexually active or an intravenous drug user. Well, a baby just born is neither, and the vaccine wears off within 5 years, even with booster shots, which means that no immunity would be there by the time someone became old enough to use drugs or to be sexually active. That's the insanity of this. In fact, everyone in America who got polio got it from the vaccine after a certain point, yet they still give it. There is no science. This is bureaucracy run amok. This is how bad government can be at the state level and at the federal level when agendas outside of our interests are at work behind the scenes, like ALEC groups, the manufacturers, working with state legislators. And we know how corrupt New Jersey is. It's just, you'd have to go to India to get to get as many people who are as inefficient and dumb, absolutely corrupt as in the New Jersey legislature. And I would start with the governor and go down. These are the worst of human beings, yet they're your representatives. Now, you either stand up and fight them, or you get fired, or you get the vaccine and take the consequences. One of those choices will be yours. But just remember this about illusion. It was Arthur Koestler who said, "Nothing is more sad than the death of an illusion." But it was also Somerset Maugham, the great author, who said, "It is dangerous to let the public behind the scenes. They are easily disillusioned, and then they are angry with you, for it is the illusion they loved." So American doctors and nurses and pharmacists, they have chosen to stay ignorant on these issues. They're as equally capable of intellectually of reading the scientific literature as myself and my staff. So we've written 4 articles describing the lack of science and efficacy, safety, and all aspects of vaccination. You can use those. We have them vetted by our in-house attorneys. We have independent scientists review them. So use those in part of your case against mandatory vaccines. Somewhere someone has to stand up. Someone has to say, "I'm not getting to the back of the bus." Someone says, "I'm going to stay at this counter." The civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the union movement, every movement starts with someone saying no. So you're going to have to say no if you want to be a part of this movement. You got my drift there?
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to mention that she had done quite a bit of research on the internet with different nursing groups. She's part of the administration now. She moved from nursing to the administration, and she thought she'd be exempt from this because it was predominantly nurses that they were mandating last year, but now it's the whole administrative staff. And in her research throughout the tri-state area, there's an outrage among nurses that are taking these flu shots. I mean, they're taking them because they want to save their jobs, but they're outraged that they have to.
So let's say that you save your job and you develop a neurological disorder and you no longer have a life.
No, it's absolutely not worth it.
No, there comes a time when even the weakest amongst us must show that we have some courage to live. That's why I respect the people who are standing up and giving the finger to everyone in the world down on Wall Street. They're not organized. They're not highly literate. They're completely clueless about everything in life. They're totally without any knowledge of history, civics, ethics, morality. They know nothing about anything. And I've talked with them. I've been down there 28 times. It's a losing battle. But what do they have on their side? They're saying, "Eat this, punk." They're saying, "I'm sick and tired of seeing you on Wall Street and you in Washington working with those on Wall Street. You're so corrupt, you're so vile, you're so greedy. How do you live with yourself?" Now, nothing's going to come from this. There'll be a quantitative increase, probably an exponential increase. There'll be thousands of these. But it won't mean anything at this point unless it radically changes. A, because it's being co-opted. B, because their agent provocateur is there to sabotage these groups in the media. And I believe they're all plants. And also, there's no sense of organization. There's no outstanding speakers coming forward. And if they did, suddenly they'd be announced by everybody else because they just have no sense of history. It's like a group of idiots woke up one day, self-entitled, spoiled brats, and said, "Well, we're going to go out there and do something." Good. Why don't you first understand what it is you're trying to do? What is the best way of doing it? What can you do that make a difference? And then why don't you look at the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the back to the nature movement, the anti-war movements, union movements? Why don't you look at millions of people working collectively and individually? How did they get to where we're at? And they swept all that aside in just pure megalomania, narcissism, like, "Well, we're here. And if a bunch of us get here and go out in the street, surely something will change." No. The only thing that happened was it became a news event with the media whore showing up who can get themselves on television and resuscitate their significance in the public mind. But what does it mean when 99.99% of the public don't show up? Initially, they'll say, "Yeah, it's a good idea." But in time, unless you have something positive, constructive that can actually make change, it all withers away. So I'm hoping that they find the intelligence to say, better to have a single idea, be against the war, be against having your money in their banks and take all the money out. I've given them, look, I met with these people privately, 250 of them, and I spent hours telling them what they could do, who shouldn't be speaking on their behalf, why they should start to be focused instead of having these assembly meetings for Robert's Rules of Order, and instead look at all the stuff that's preceded you. You can use those so you don't reinvent the wheel. Unfortunately, right now there's also divisiveness, and where the original integrity and honor and rightness of the Ron Paul young college students who were against the Federal Reserve, against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, our militarization around the world, our globalization, military policy, that's what the original Tea Party was about. And look how quickly it was co-opted. Look how it was taken away from them. And then look what happened to it after that. If this doesn't have a really strong fundamental change in what they're doing, just showing up and just raising hell is not enough. But showing up is important. Raising hell is important. Telling people in the establishment, we're not going to be passive and meek any longer. Because remember, there was a time where if you showed up as a Republican or Democrat to any of your local committee meetings of your legislators, and if you spoke to them outside of a whisper, you were considered a provocateur. Who is this radical person coming here and raising hell? How dare you? And so people were marginalized. I wonder what you would think if you had a microphone that was plugged in to Philadelphia when the great debates were occurring between Jefferson and Hamilton and those who were the Federalists and those who were the monarchists. And those, there was a great deal of very cantankerous debate, and yet we have forgotten that. Today, those people just wouldn't be in the streets. They would be there with a purpose more than just bringing to light that there is a corruption in America and disparity in America. Duh, you think so? You think no one knew it? You think all the people that I'm filming every day were clueless about the fact that they were going to be poor now and tomorrow, that they don't have a home now or in the future, that their credit cards are at usurious rates, that their student loans won't be able to be repaid back and there's not going to be the jobs they were promised? You think that they're just aware of this because you told them so? No. Reality always exists before our awareness of its significance. So we're at a clarion moment here. I am not either Cassandra, and I'm not here to instill fear. I'm merely here to say that if your wife and all the other nurses are capable of complaining and being bitter about the fact that they had to take a vaccine or lose their jobs, then are they also as equally concerned about the vaccines they administer to children and then see the child turn autistic or ADD or brain dysfunctional? Are they that concerned about anyone else? Or are they so selfish that just like many of the people in the streets are not willing to look at the larger good that could be served if all the nurses in America went on general strike? Boy, that would piss people off. In fact, the last time there was an actual reduction in major death is when all the doctors in Israel went on strike. Death rates plummeted. Wonder how that connects. Well, that's another film called Death by Medicine. So at some point, you got to either shut the hell up from complaining or stand up and give someone the finger and say, I'm not going to take any more. I'm mad as hell. And here's what I'm thinking. I'm not going to give anyone else a vaccine. I would refuse to take myself. Because let me ask this about your wife. Is your wife the same person who's going to say, I'm not going to give anyone else the vaccine and I'm not going to give it myself? Or is your wife the kind of person who says, I don't want the vaccine for myself, but I have no problem giving it to someone else?
No, she wouldn't give it.
Okay, then she would be fired for that.
Yeah, now she would.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, any nurse that refuses to give a vaccine to a patient would be fired. So let your wife lead the new cause. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You've got millions of parents out there who have seen their children, completely healthy, normal children, had the full assurance of their arrogant, egotistic, megalomaniac, gold stethoscopes doctors and blithely numb-headed nurses and pharmacists who say, come on up, we're going to inject you. Hold on a second. You're going to inject me with what? The vaccine. Why? To protect you. Can you show me any double-blind, placebo-controlled studies against one group that was vaccinated and one group that was not for 6 years, 1,000 on each side, cross-match for age, sex, physical condition, that represent the full spectrum of children in the United States, not just healthy ones? No. Doesn't the package insert state that it shouldn't be given to anyone with a compromised immune system, existing cold or flu? Yes. Have you asked anyone what their underlying medical condition is? No. So you're willing to give this vaccine to just anyone, as many as you can get? Yes. How scientific is that? Well, it's officially accepted. And anything that's officially accepted, hold on, wasn't apartheid officially accepted? Wasn't slavery officially accepted? Wasn't not allowing women to own property and not allowing women to vote officially accepted? Isn't it officially accepted in many places of the world that a woman's not allowed to eat before her husband and must serve herself last before the men get theirs? Isn't that called misogyny? Yeah, what's that have to do with vaccination? It has everything to do with an idea that cannot withstand a legitimate challenge. But as long as no one's willing to challenge it, whatever kind of degrading behavior exists will continue to exist. So at some point, join those of us who have broken free of giving a damn about what anyone thinks of it. The whole world can go screw themselves when it comes to me deciding, do I want to be popular, accepted, or do I want to be on the side of right? Because truth is always, always opposite the official scientific position when it comes to public health. The difference is on our side, we've got a lot of people who are living preventatively. On their side, they got a lot of dead and diseased bodies. When was the last time doctors said, we have 900,000 of us, we have hundreds of millions of patients, let's go on strike to prevent any more children from developing adult diabetes and by these foods that they're told to take?
Never.
How about never? Well, then let's get all the union people together and go on a general strike to stop the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, militarization, and stop all jobs being outsourced that kill our membership. How about not?
Yeah, how could they even have passed that bill for Korea?
So what we see is we see a nation of extraordinarily selfish, self-absorbed people with young people who are so narcissistic that they would cause even narcissist in the original mythological poem to feel embarrassed. We have people who are clueless about history and about what to do with it to make a difference. We assume that someone else is going to find the answer to our problem and we want someone else to change, but not us. We're easy to criticize everything. We're all critics and all experts on everything except looking at the truth for who we are in the mirror. If we could take away all the illusions and veils and masks, we would be just screaming at what we see as the true person. And so we lie. We create myths about who we are, the relevance of our being. We sell people on our stories, fabrications of self. Uniqueness of self. Our relationships are perverted, and more often than not. And what we do in materialistically externalizing our pain by sublimating, by purchasing, acquiring, working, is all for naught. At the end of the day, there's an old proverb, the richest king and the poorest serf go in the same box. So only at some point when there's a crisis do we stop the telling of our story that we have mastered. We stop the justification of our ego. We stop the perversion of the notion of love and hate because they cannot come from the same person. You cannot have the light side and the dark side coexist. So when we think we're doing something out of love, more often than not, we're doing it out of fear. True unconditional love is completely the opposite of how we live. I'm out there looking at 14 million hungry children who go to school in the United States each day without food in their belly because their parents are too poor. I just filmed a married couple with two young children, who were cooking the children some noodles on the radiator of their car in the woods because they had no job. He has a master's degree in engineering. He used to work for NASA. I filmed a man who was worth $500 million and now he's living in a garage. I have seen all types of people, and what I do not see is people caring for the senior citizens, do not care for people in nursing homes, and so they are abused and neglected, dying of starvation or dehydration of gross liquid reduction. I've seen children graduating from schools who are illiterate and taught by illiterate teachers. I see a media that is so repulsively biased on the left and right and yet people succumb to the need for the cult of acceptance. Who are they going to be with? Rush Limbaugh? Sean Hannity? Who? And then I see the truth buried in all things. And if you start any process without the truth, the foundation upon which you build it is no different than building the Taj Mahal in quicksand. It will all sink in time. And only in that moment when we never thought we had to give up the cheeseburgers, french fries, and hot dogs and pizzas, when we never thought we had to give up the alcohol, when we never thought we had to give up the smoking, and we have our stroke, or we have our breast cancer, prostate cancer, or we have our heart attack, or we suddenly realize we don't remember, we have dementia, and we're only 52. And our kids are obese, and our kids are sick, and our kids are illiterate. It is the exception that isn't. And then we look around the world and we wonder, why are all of our institutions so corrupt? And why are politicians, with a few exceptions, so corrupt? And why is our paradigm so corrupt? It's because we are corrupt. You cannot have a paradigm control you and imprison you without your consent. But how do they get your consent? They lull you in to thinking that world that you live in will be better if you have their belief system in your place. So we buy their cars, watch their television programs, we eat their food, drink their beverages, support them financially, and then we stop thinking. Just like so many of the people down on Wall Street, and I said, I'm there to support you. But tell me, friend, what are you against? And they said, we're against Wall Street. And I said, does that mean globalization? And I had to explain what globalization was to college graduates, one from Yale and one from Rutgers. And once I explained what was wrong with globalization, he said, yes, we're against it. I said, how much are you against it? We're against it. We're down here, aren't you? I said, yeah, but you can go home. Most people here can go home. You'll have people who will bail you out at some point. But are you against globalization completely? Yes. Then why are you eating their hamburgers, drinking their soft drinks? Why are you smoking their cigarettes, wearing their Nike sneakers, wearing their Tommy Hilfiger glasses, and everything you're doing and keeping money in their bank account? That's all globalization. How can you come out and be a part of a movement without even something more than anger? Anger in and of itself is non-constructive. But it takes discipline, patience to focus that anger into becoming a productive energy of change. That doesn't exist right now. If it did, then all the synagogues, churches, and mosques in the United States would ask their parishioners to help the poor in their neighborhoods. Instead of, like I just filmed, in one state, a minister was arrested for taking food to homeless people in a public park. Since when are we arresting those in churches for helping the suffering? Because other people who are not suffering were offended that the poor should show themselves. So as long as you stay invisible and you don't walk on our streets, then we don't have a problem with you. But if you sit on our park benches, we'll have you arrested. And I film people who are arrested, who did nothing wrong, no sin, no crime. They just were sitting on a public bench. So before people consider us like Bill O'Reilly and the other people of his ilk, that we are an exceptionalism nation, well, are you including exceptionalism in the form of not having an increase in living wage in the last 30 years, the exporting of 30 million jobs, either the destruction of those jobs through corporate engineering, what are called equity partnerships, used to be called green mailing, and then corporate raiders? Was that exceptional? Was it exceptional that any bank can create money out of thin air? Was it exceptional the Federal Reserve can give $16 trillion to its banking friends? Was it exceptional that they created mass stock ventures and which bankrupt the American economy, including subprime mortgages? Is it part of our exceptionalism that we run off into these war ventures where we cannot win and there was no purpose of us being there and we never apologize for being wrong or how many innocents we kill? Is that part of our exceptionalism? Is it part of the exceptionalism that an average family in the United States today is not making more than they did in 1976 when you adjust for inflation and cost of merchandise? Is it exceptionalism that we're bankrupt with $210 trillion in underfunded or unfunded entitlements and debts? These people will never discuss this. Is it exceptionalism when the largest polluter in the world is the U.S. military? And they'll never discuss it. nor will your doctor look for the truth in the vaccines that they will insist that your wife administer or oversee. So you see, when you make a change to become independent, to become free, to make up your own mind, you're free to be right and you're free to be wrong. But that's a freedom they're afraid of. There will be a consequence to your freedom. There always is. You and your wife had to determine whether or not you had the courage at this point in your life to accept that as a risk worth taking. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all very much. This has been the Progressive Commentary Hour. I appreciate your listening in. Stay tuned for Curtis Ellis. He's in studio. Coming up next.